Oh, snaps.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Good morning, everybody. I am Dee Dee, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our what business, and where friends don't let friends feed kibble. Joining me today is the wonderful, fabulous Dr. Judy Jasek, J-A-S-E-K. How are you today, Dr. Jasek?
Oh, doing pretty good. You know, hanging in there in these interesting times. Every day, you know, you wake up and like, wow, is this real? Or did I just dream this? And you know, you realize it's real. Like, gosh, I wonder what's happening in the world today. You know, I've never experienced life changing so quickly. Every day, it's a new situation out there. So very interesting times for sure.
Everybody's switching up how they're doing business. They're saying, how can I continue to serve my customers and still practice social distancing and be safe? And you've started thinking outside of the box and actually working outside of the box of your home. You're working outside. You're seeing patients outside, which is fabulous.
Yeah, I thought, well, why not? I mean, I do wear a mask and gloves so that I am, you know, protecting myself. And, you know, I can work on pets and, you know, the people can still stay a safe distance and we're outside. So there's good airflow, good air movement. It's not like in your home or in a building, the air can be a little bit more stagnant. And I don't want my home to get contaminated. So I thought, well, this is a safe way. And hey, it's springtime. So the weather's nice. You know, if it was December, I have to rethink that. But then I'm also doing phone and Zoom appointments. And we can do a lot of stuff that way. We can talk about an awful lot. I can, you know, look at the pet live on the computer. If people want to, you know, show me something, I did an appointment last week, a limping dog. I could watch the dog, you know, kind of limp around and get an idea of what, you know, what might be going on. So, you know, there's a lot we can do and we need to adapt and do what we can to, continue to help people.
We are an essential business, as are you. So I'm hoping that all of the people out there that have essential businesses, you know, that we will continue to spend our money wisely. You know, up here in Evergreen, there are restaurants, and so they have takeout meals, right? So they're doing takeout. So we're trying to order from there and keep as many people employed as possible. That's what we want to do. Don't hoard your money at this time. Don't spend crazy, but get out there and buy from the places that are doing takeout. We got to support those folks.
Yeah, it's devastating for some of these businesses that just, you know, a lot of businesses have to close for a couple of months and you know, they're done, you know, so, and unfortunately they're not getting these nice bailouts that the big corporations are. They're getting loans. They're getting some loans from the government, but they're not getting, you know, these trillions of dollars in bailouts like the banks and some of these big corporations are. And, you know, they need to be able to reopen their doors. When is that going to happen? When are they going to allow restaurants to reopen? I mean, I understand why they're doing it to prevent, you know, the spread of the virus, but we just don't know how long this is going to go on. I think that's what's hard. You know, we want to be in control of our life. You want to be able to make decisions. What am I going to do next week? What am I going to do next month? Where am I going to go on vacation this year? And it's like, you can't make any long-term anything, any kind of decisions that you can consider written in stone. Everything has to be subject to change. So it's a good exercise in adaptation, but boy, it's a huge change from, you know, the way we used to live in our lives.
It is. I don't know if you saw this. This was quite interesting. Dr. Peter DeBias, who is an online vet, primarily sells a lot of supplements now. But I got an email from him this week where he was sharing a video interview with Dr. Pekova Dr. Pekova, who is a Czech medical doctor, a molecular biologist, and a geneticist. And this interview, Dr. Pekova states that the genome sequence of SARS, the COVID-19, she says in this interview, is unlikely to be natural, and its characteristics suggest it was genetically engineered. So if anybody's interested in watching that, I think you can pull that up by Dr. Pekova, P-E-K-O-V-A, a Czech medical doctor. Now, I'm not one for conspiracy theories, but I think that's quite interesting. The genome sequence, she said it would be very difficult for that to have evolved naturally in the world, that it has to have been genetically engineered. Now, that is quite frightening.
That is frightening. And I actually saw that. I actually had a client send me that, that little clip. And I read the transcript because I don't know Czechoslovakian or whatever language the video is in. But the transcript was quite detailed. And it's a scary thought. But when you look at how much genetic modification is going out there in our plants and you know, they've done cloning, they've done all these crazy genetic experiments. It would not surprise me at all if that technology is out there and, you know, who knows, could this have been an intentional release or an accidental release from a lab? You know, it's hard telling, but it is a scary thought that technology is available. And then, you know, the viruses can continue to be mutated. And once you take a mutated virus and put it out there in the real world, you don't know what it's going to do. You know, it's not a natural situation at that point. So, you know, is it going to be more severe or less severe, or, you know, who knows what can happen from that point. So yeah, that's very scary.
Yeah. So if you guys want to take a look at that, you can just pull that up. There is a transcript. You can email me and I'll be glad to send it to you at dd@rawdogfoodandco.com. All right. I want to ask about growing pains in puppies because you mentioned dogs limping. And one of the, I did have a pet parent who called me and, you know, they have a giant breed. Okay. A giant breed. We kind of took a look at how much the dog was eating and, you know, we're kind of wondering, sometimes pet parents really want to see their dogs heavier than they should be. And one of the things that we definitely want to, you know, kind of warn you against is causing your giant breeds to grow too fast. But there is this natural growing pains that can cause dogs to limp, is there not?
Mm-hmm, there is. It's a condition called panosteitis, which is just a big word for inflammation of the bones. And usually they'll limp on a be shifting leg. So it'll kind of move from leg to leg. They can sometimes run a little bit of a fever. And so they'll be kind of lethargic, maybe not feel like eating, not feel like exercising. And it is something that they get over. Now I think it's going to be much less likely in, you know, puppies that are minimally vaccinated. So we know vaccines perpetuate inflammation in the body. And so if we have, you know, say worst case scenario is we have a puppy, and this is usually in the large breed dogs when they're really, really starting to put on the growth, like, you know, 6 to 10 months, kind of in that age range. And if they've just had all these vaccines, they just got their first rabies shot and, you know, 4 or 5 boosters of these big combination shots. So their bodies are pretty inflamed. And if they're feeding a kibble diet where they're, you know, then they're even more inflamed and their gut is impacted, then they go through a growth spurt. You're really setting them up for, you know, an inflammatory condition. I think it's going to be much, much less likely if puppies are minimally vaccinated and they're on a raw diet. So they're not getting the inflammation from, you know, from the food And so their bodies are not so inflamed. So they go through a little growth spurt, and then their bodies are better able to manage it. And I also think that, you know, moderating growth. So I've heard this debate over the years, how much protein, how much minerals, and all this. And in the commercial dog food industry, like the kibble diets, you know, they're micromanaging these nutrients. When you feed whole food, you're feeding a raw food diet. So you're feeding whole food ingredients, you're feeding ground bone. Ground bone is a natural balanced mineral supplement, and the minerals are in the right proportions. What happens in a kibble based diet is you add calcium, but then you have to have the right amount of phosphorus to balance that. But what if the calcium is more absorbable than the phosphorus? Because these are all synthetic ingredients, and then you get the wrong balance. And so then you can actually throw off the normal mineral content of the bone. So by feeding a whole food, nutritionally balanced diet, so all the things we talk about, the rotation, the organ meats, you want to get all this variety in there, I think it's much less likely that they're going to have that, because A, they're going to be less inflamed, and B, they're not going to go through an abnormally pushed growth spurt like they could on a diet that's 50% carbohydrate, like a kibble diet.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how many people feed Honest Kitchen. Okay, and honestly, it drives me nuts. Have you ever seen the Honest Kitchen GA? I mean, it is packed full of sugar. You guys, it's almost 50% sugar when you look at it. And I know that is something that people like to use to mix in with raw meat. But to me, it's like, you just can't outrun that much sugar, guys. So we've got to help you stop doing that.
Yeah, and read ingredients. I find this a lot in these dehydrated diets. So they're less processed than the kibble, true. But a lot of times the ingredients aren't any better. And you can even like look at them visually. Like I look at the pictures of them online, and they're like high percentage of potato and carbs. And why do they do that? Because those are cheap fillers. And I have not seen dogs do very well on diets like Honest Kitchen. They just don't have enough like meat and enough, you know, natural animal protein that the dogs need. They're very high in carbohydrate and very, very high vegetable content. And so they're just not getting the nutrients they need. I've seen a lot of dogs have trouble holding their weight on those diets. So you do have to be really careful. And for what they cost, they're really not worth it. You're not getting good nutrition. Honest Kitchen's expensive, as are all the other dehydrated. So if you're going to do a dehydrated, do one that's at least more, you know, more meat-based. But then, you know, also, why are you giving the dehydrated? Is there really a reason, to be giving it? I had a client ask me or email me and said that, and her dogs had chronic GI issues, and she said that she felt that the dog needed kibble to push the stool out, that when it was on raw, it just wasn't pooping normally, which doesn't make any sense to me. So we've got a phone consult scheduled. So I think we need to get on the phone and talk about this.
Yeah, and I would probably ask her, I mean, give me, which blend are you feeding? Let's look at the bone content.
So I think sometimes, you know, it's easy to jump on, well, something doesn't seem quite right on these raw blends I'm feeding, so I'm going to add in something completely different. You know, contact us and let's see if we can work with the raw, because you do have to vary your proportions and how you're feeding with the individual. It's not a one size fits all program.
No, that's where we lose some people. That's where we lose it, because they like the convenience, which is the whole reason that kibble was started in the first place. And convenience kills. How many times do I have to tell you that? Convenience kills. I want to talk a little bit about this combination of what's happening right now. We're doing this. Everybody's having to work outside of the box, coming up with new ideas. How do we reach out to our customer base? This includes the traditional corporate veterinary practices. They are starting to do these drop-off curbside, you know, services as well. So you drop off the dogs. And something that concerns you and I very much is just dropping off the dog and saying, do whatever needs to be done. And that is not something that you want to do, my sweet pet parents. You want to know what is going to happen when you drop off your dogs, because there are many, 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 and I don't know how many times I could say many vets who will just go ahead and give your dog this vaccine or that vaccine, and they're not even getting your consent, or they are not explaining to you the adverse effects and getting your approval. So, Dr. Jasek, how do we help our pet parents take their pet's health back into their own hands?
Well, I would say with this curbside drop off, and well, first of all, the reason this is a concern for me is because I've heard about, you know, things being done without consent, with the owner standing right there, like pets get vaccines and they get things without full consent. And so probably the safest thing to do is to say you want a full written estimate before they do anything to the dog or cat. Say you want a full written estimate and that you want to, you know, you want to authorize anything before they do it. So they can, look the pet over, but then before they do any diagnostics. And, you know, it's another thing. What if they say, oh, we need to take an x-ray, and you got a $200 bill for x-rays that you didn't authorize, or $300 or whatever they're charging. And then they drew blood for blood work and maybe didn't authorize that. But then they're like, well, you know, we think this is a good idea. You should have a full estimate of everything they want to do, and you should be able to sign off on it. All the computer programs that client, software programs all allow vets to do this. So this isn't, you're not asking them for anything big. But I would insist on a written estimate, not just a verbal, because, you know, this is disruptive for everybody, including the clinics, including the staff. It's a whole new routine, and they're not going to remember everything you said, and they may not tell you everything. They may just forget. It may be very innocent, but say you're probably going to be communicating also more with the technicians than with the veterinarians. And so, you know, the dog, you know, you're going to take your dog or your cat's going to be taken into the clinic by the tech, examined. The tech's probably going to come out and say, okay, we recommend this, this, and this. There's always things lost in translation, right? I mean, that's just human nature. That's not, you know, that's not anything against veterinary technicians. They're, you know, great, very hardworking people, but, you know, your verbal communication has its pitfalls, and you want in writing, and you want to be able to sign off on it. And if there's things you don't authorize, then you make sure they're taken off of the estimate before you sign it. So I think that's probably the best thing to do. And, you know, ask questions, you know, is this medically necessary for my pet? If they want to give medications, they recommend vaccines. You should always be educated on the pros and cons of everything. And you know, what are the benefits? You know, money's going to be tight for a lot of people. And so you may have to ask, well, you know, can you help me prioritize here? You know, like, okay, I can't pay $1,000 today. I don't have that much in my budget. Help me prioritize, so we can do what's most important for my pet right now. And, you know, ask those questions. Don't get yourself in a big bind where you pay a lot for this initial vet visit and then you don't have money for future treatments. You know, you absolutely have the right to be asking these questions and to be advocating for your pets.
I would challenge my pet parents. I would ask you this question. How many of you understand or have read the side effects or the adverse reactions that can come with vaccines? And You know, be honest with yourself. Do you really know, or are you just allowing yourself to go in and say, well, it's time for, you know, this annual vaccine for my dog? I was reading an article in Dogs Naturally. It was written by Jody Gernstein, so Dr. Jody Gernstein. And she was talking about because vaccines and vet visits are in decline, you know, vets have to look at a different way to increase their income. But she's talking about lepto. And she says that annual vaccinations have been pushed for many years, and pet parents have come to believe that their only reason to take their pets to a vet annually is for this vaccination. Okay. So what have vets decided to do? Well, they've begun promoting a separate leptospirosis vaccine as a core vaccine. But according to the AVMA, lepto isn't a core vaccine. And we've said that many, 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 many times. It is not a core vaccine. It is not recommended for all dogs. And I would bet my bottom that that you have no idea how dangerous the lepto vaccine can be. So what we're trying to say here is that study up on vaccines, what you need and what you don't need. But Dr. Jasek, I think that one of the other disturbing things that you and I were talking about is if you have a puppy that you cannot take your puppy in to even be looked at without them saying, I'm not going to look at your puppy unless you get all these vaccines. Is that true?
Yeah, I have heard that. I heard that from a client that was going to go into one of the local clinics here, and she could not get a puppy exam without them also doing vaccines. And you know, the thing to keep in mind is vaccines are huge money makers. They really are. The markup is tremendous, and these corporate clinics, you know, the vets are required to meet quotas. So you see these VCA clinics popping up all over the place. There's a large corporate stronghold, and the decisions about what the vets recommend are not necessarily made by the veterinarian. They're told what they're supposed to recommend, and if corporate decides they want their vet selling X number of these vaccines, well then they've got to do them, you know, or they could put their, you know, their jobs in danger. The other thing with these vaccines is it's not like all these different vaccines are individual and they're deciding which ones to give. These are big combination shots. And I suspect that the reason they're saying this is now a quote unquote core vaccine is they've got it in the vaccines anyway, and they want some justification for using it. And that makes these vaccines even more dangerous because they have five or six different components. And then, you know, you pile rabies on top of that if you're going in for, you know, annual checkups, and it's so much, you know, for the immune system. There are monovalent vaccines, singular component vaccines, but most vets don't use them. I do. I have singular parvo, singular distemper, and then I do minimal vaccines, and then I do titer testing to measure the response. I started seeing such a high reaction rate to the lepto vaccine years ago. I quit using the lepto vaccine probably 10 or 12 years ago, at least, because I just started seeing so many pets react adversely to vaccines that had the lepto component in it. And there's no really great evidence that the vaccine is that effective. That's why they recommend giving it more frequently. They don't really have the kind of testing showing, you know, how long the antibodies last but after you give a lepto vaccine. So like, well, you know, it's questionable efficacy, so let's just give it every 6 months just to make sure that, you know, they're staying protected. Well, you're subjecting your pet to this ongoing reaction from this vaccine.
But I can't tell you how many of our customers have given the lepto. and continue to give the lepto. And I ask why. Well, because my vet said I needed to. Why? And so it's these questions, you know, and in it, again, we say this almost every podcast, but it's a mindset with kibble and vaccines that both are safe, because the marketing on that has been so effective for so long. But you guys, when we just see so many dogs and hear so many stories, you know, in a year, in 2 years, in 3 years, in 5 years, that we can tell you that 9 times out of 10 or 9.5 times out of 10, it is not the food. And people want to call me and say, you know, my dog stopped eating the raw food. And I start asking a lot of questions. And we find out that, you know, it's something else that is going on. It is either the way that you are administering food. And when I say that, I mean, you're not doing the rotation, right? So if you're feeding a higher fat blend or you're feeding one protein all the time, dogs might stop eating. But there is a list of 20 different things that we see. Why dogs stop eating. None have to do with the actual blend being a bad blend. It may be the way you're administering it or adding things to it or something outside of that, i.e. medications, vaccines, something along that line. Wouldn't you agree, Dr. Jason?
Yeah, totally. And if, you know, if the pet's on concurrent medications, supplements, even things like, you know, your heartworm prevention, flea and tick preventatives, there's all these things that start to get added in this time of the year, outdoor, you know, pesticides and insecticides, you know, the pets are being exposed to a lot more this time of the year. And those can all really throw the system off. So, and for some reason, if a pet's eating raw and they quit eating, it's the food. People don't tend to think that if they're eating kibble. It's not the kibble, you know, which is more likely, you know, to be the case than if they're eating raw, more likely that the kibble would be actually causing a problem. Another thing, you know, along these lines, I've been mentioning to people this time of year, because I see my own pets doing this, you know, the grass is green, things are starting to grow, and dogs like to go out there and nibble a little bit. I think it's a natural kind of instinct to like do a little spring detox. My little Chihuahua goes up to the garden, which has just got the, you know, weeds and stuff sprouting in it now outside, but she'll spend 20 minutes up there chomping on stuff. And you know what? A lot of times the next time I feed, she won't eat. I'm like, well, she felt like she needed to go eat all that stuff. But dogs will, you know, sometimes go out and nibble on these new grasses and weeds and things like that. And sometimes they'll even vomit. And, you know, I think this is potentially, you know, a little bit of an instinctive spring detoxification. So if your pet quits eating at this time of year, just, you know, bear that in mind. Do some rotation. Try a different blend. Sometimes they'll just skip a meal. It's fine. You know, sometimes that's just what their body tells them that they need to do. And see if they eat the next time. And how are they acting? Is their energy still good? You know, they're still wanting to go for walks. They're still feeling good. They just missed a meal. It's not really that big of a deal.
Well, and look, the world is stressed right now. You think your pets aren't feeling that? The other thing that I want to ask you about, because I hear this over and over, we would always suggest if somebody contacts us and says, my dog's not eating, and I do a rundown and I find that they're doing many supplements, we're always going to ask you to take the supplements out of the diet for a while, just so that you can see, you get down to a basic food. But Dr. Jasek, I'm going to tell you, that is like prying cold, hard cash out of their hands. They do not want to give up their supplements. And here's what I hear. Pet parents will say to me, I've been given these supplements for years, red flag. And these, you know, they can't be the supplements. And I'm like, first of all, I wouldn't give the same supplements for a year. We suggest you, you know, rotate your supplements like you rotate your food. But what do you have to say to pet parents who just aren't willing to let go of that supplement for a while.
Well, and I agree. I mean, that's what I do too, is if we've got a pet that just isn't, you know, either isn't eating, number one, if you're putting all these supplements in the food, the pet may just be sick of the way all that stuff tastes. And I've seen a lot of pets stop eating, you know, because it's the stuff in the food. So then we'll feed a few meals without the supplements and then they'll eat fine. If there is not a good sound reason to be giving a certain supplement, don't give it. Save the money. Put the money in your food budget. And if you notice a you know, really distinct benefit, like you put your pet on a certain supplement and, you know, something improves or feels better or is less painful or whatever the supplement's for, then great, give it. But I find more often than not that people don't even know if the supplements are helping. It's a peace of mind thing, I think, for a lot of people. Well, you know, I know all this stuff about needing to balance the diet, but if I just add these six supplements in, then I'll feel like, you know, the diet's balanced. And you have no idea if those supplements are even benefiting your pet, or they could be doing harm. There could be ingredients in there that are not agreeing with your pet. So you have to be really careful. Supplements are not benign.
So I had a customer who said that her dogs, that they just couldn't digest the bone in the 10% bone blend because they were a little bit larger chunks. Now these are medium-sized dogs. I said, well, that doesn't sound right. That's not normal. If you look at what the bone content suggests by Dr. Billinghurst, I mean, it's 25% bone, okay? 20-25% bone. Now, a dog should absolutely be able to digest bone, especially raw bone in the diet. What other things are in the diet? And this is what I was told. I use BioPrep, I use EPA, I use standard process canine whole body support, I use Zeewee Peak freeze-dried raw, and I use some other toppers. And my suggestion was, take all that stuff out of the diet. Take it out. No, did not want to take it out because it had to be that, you know, the dog was, and here was the thing, the dog was vomiting. And in the vomit, there were pieces of bone. So that equated in this particular pet parent's mind that they couldn't digest bone. I said, well, that doesn't necessarily suggest that they can't digest bone. You know, it suggests that they vomited and it wasn't digested yet.
You know what I suspect in that scenario, that something in the supplements was changing the pH in the stomach.
I said that exactly.
Great minds think alike, don't they?
Well, I said that, and here is the response, and I'll read it to you right now. I have been using these supplements for years, and they should not cause any pH disturbance.
Yeah, but then why not prove it? You know, it's like nothing, unless a pet is on a medication, it is probably going to be a medication if it's absolutely crucial for their health that they need to stay on it, a heart medication or something like that. They just have to be on it. There's going to be absolutely no harm in stopping these nutritional supplements for 2 weeks and just see what happens. And I recommend that all the time. Like, look, we need to get a new baseline. And then you can slowly start to add things back. And then I see what happens. See, does the pet respond? Is there a change? Is there no change? You know, what's going on? And then you can slowly start to add things back in. Because, you know, when you're giving that many things, I have no idea how they're, what effect they're having. And some of these supplements, like the, you know, the standard process supplements, one of the reasons that I don't like that line is because they'll have 30 or 40 ingredients in their supplements. So if something isn't going right, how do you know the pet isn't reacting to one of those, you know, one of those many, many, many ingredients? So those are like those multi-ingredient, it's not just standard process. There's others out there that will just have some, you know, you read the active ingredients and there'll be like 15 inactive ingredients. And like, well, what is this stuff even in there for? And you have no idea what effect those are going to be having on the pet until you stop them. And I'm a big believer in very targeted and, you know, very limited ingredient supplements. So we know we're giving them for a specific reason. We're not giving them just because. Shouldn't be giving supplements just because. You should be, if you're concerned about balanced nutrition, then the first place to start is balancing the diet, because you can achieve, you know, good balanced nutrition by doing the, you know, the raw rotation. And if you want to add in a little something for peace of mind, add in some phytoplankton. It's a very nutritious whole food supplement, but there's nothing synthetic in there. I've never seen a phytoplankton product cause a problem, honestly.
That's probably one of our top sellers. And I honestly would like to take it myself. I mean, you know, it's like put it in a smoothie. It smells like wheatgrass. It's just this little green, you know, powder that we put in the dog's food. And it's fabulous. I mean, that is fabulous. That's probably one of the top ones that we sell. And we don't sell the standard process anymore either. We only do the Adored Beast. And then we have some farm dog naturals, but those are mostly salves. So really the only lines that we do are the Adored Beast, and we really love those. But even that, I mean, again, you don't need to throw, and I see this, and you know, I could, if I wanted to, just sell, because honestly, I see some of the online vets, and that's what they do. They sell the supplements. We want it to enhance the raw diet if you need it. So for instance, Dr. Jason, there are a lot of people that will not rotate. Okay, they just won't. You know, they're just not going to rotate, or they're not going to rotate very much. And when you see that, that's when I say, then you better be adding some phytoplankton. Or if your dog's not going to eat real fish, as you and I love for the vitamin D and the omega-3s, then put that phytoplankton in there. But I just don't know. Why, if you email me or you email Dr. Jasek or Neely Piazza, if you really don't want some expert advice, I'm not sure why you're emailing.
Right, exactly. Because we might not give you the answer that you want. And I do see that sometimes as well. So I'm laughing. Like, people will keep asking and asking and asking and hoping for a different answer. Like, well, I'm not, you know, not going to give you a different answer. You know, the other thing too about the rotation that is so valuable, in addition to the nutritional benefits, is this is how we get a healthy microbiome, because you need to feed, you want to be feeding the bacteria. The best way to have a healthy microbiome is to be feeding the bacteria appropriately. You know, trying to replace the bacteria in the gut with probiotics is not always the best answer. It's not that probiotics are bad, but I think they're overutilized. I think they're like a, you know, kind of like a Band-Aid. Like, well, I don't know if my diet's the best, my pet's diet's the best. I just add some probiotics in and we're covered. Well, that handful of bacteria that are in those probiotics are no substitution for the thousands of species that are supposed to be growing in the gut. And the way you get all those healthy bacteria growing and thriving is by feeding a variety of foods, and all these each different protein, you know, different animal fats, your tripe, your fish, all the organs, all these different things feed different bacteria. So if you want more diversity and healthier bacteria, you have to feed all these different foods. That's how you get the healthiest microbiome. So we really should not be, you know, I think supplementation sometimes is a cop-out. It's easy. Well, I don't want to do this rotation thing, so I'm just going to throw a couple supplements at my pet and then they'll be fine. It is not the same. Your pet is not going to get the same benefit.
Exactly. I'm going to put the claps right in there. Amen, sister. Preach it on. Preach on. I love it. I love it. I love it. All right. So today what we want you to walk away with is this. If you're dropping your dog off at the curbside service, You need to know what the heck is going to go on inside of there before you give your okay. Okay, pet parents?
You know, just ask. It's not a criticism. It's not an unreasonable demand. Just say, hey, I would like to know exactly what you're planning on doing before you work on my pet. And I would like to see a signed estimate. I mean, that's commonplace. And it's no big deal for them to put that together. And they should be providing that anyway. They really should. I mean, that is just good business practice, that you don't come out and say, okay, we're going to do these things and it'll be around, you know, $1,000 to $3,000 or something. And no, don't put up with that. Get it all in writing. And I know from personal experience, I've done estimates off the top of my head and they're always wrong. When will I learn? I had to train myself. When will I learn to put estimates in the computer? Because then they're going to be correct. So ask for it in writing. It is not an unreasonable request by any means.
And pet parents can say, you need to get my consent before you do anything, right? You're going to get your written estimate. And then pet parents, you need to do your homework before you give your consent. But I think that vets need to stop taking the stance that they're the be-all, end-all, the decision ends with them. No, the decision begins and ends with the pet parent. It's up to you to know the adverse effects, to know what the pros and cons are, in regards to your vaccines. What are your core vaccines? What are your non-core vaccines? What are your puppy shots? What do you need? Well, we've got those in all of the podcasts that we've already done. So if you will look down the podcast line, you're going to see many of those questions have been answered on the podcast. But if you do not want to listen to the podcast and you want to get a consult with Dr. Jasek, well, she can do that with you by Zoom. It is fabulous. What kind of deals you got going on right now, Dr. Jasek?
Well, I'm offering a 15-minute, like a little mini consult for $35. If your pet's sick and you're like, oh gosh, I don't know, is this an emergency? You know, did my dog throw up a couple times? I don't know if I need to take them into the vet. This will be just a short little consult. We can talk about current symptoms and we can do Zoom if necessary, you know, so I can actually, you know, get a visual on your pet. And I would say in most cases, because I've been doing this a very long time, I can discern pretty quickly if it's an emergency. If you need to take the pet in, I'll say, yeah, take the pet in. If something you can, you know, wait and see, I will tell you things to watch for. And, you know, is the signs that things are getting worse, it's more serious. Okay, if these things happen, then take your pet in. I can also talk to you about some home remedies, some things you can do at home to help get your pet over some little tummy aches and things like that. So you don't just have to be, you know, running into the vet as often, perhaps, during these unusual times.
It doesn't matter whether you're in New York or you're here in Colorado, you can work with Dr. Jasek, especially if you are a raw feeder, okay? Especially if you're a raw feeder or you're having issues with your dog, you need to be a raw feeder, okay? And it doesn't matter whose raw food you're buying. I mean, obviously, we can help you out with that. So contact Dr. Judy Jasek, or you can always contact me at dd@rawdogfoodandco.com. If you have a question that you would like for us to answer on the podcast, please email us and we will get it on. Okay, Dr. Jasek, well, I wish you happiness, health, and fabulous curbside service.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business. Just snap.
Yes. And health and well-being to everybody out there listening. Thanks for tuning in.